Welcome to your weekly English radio magazine on CJMQ 88.9 FM in Sherbrooke and CIDI 99.1 FM in the Lake Brome area. It's the Friday Drive, news commentary, 30-30 sports, arts and culture, and the interview of the week. Local events and issues for townshippers from townshippers. The Friday Drive starts right now with your host, Daniel Coulomb. 30-30 Sports on the Friday Drive.
Starting the show at 4:30 with John Edwards. How are you this week?
So far, so good. How are you?
Not bad. You survived Elmira. That's amazing, and you live to talk about it.
Got the full Sugar Kings experience in lovely and scenic Elmira, Ontario.
Is Elmira actually bigger than Airscliff, for example?
Probably a little bit bigger than Airscliff, but not by much.
All right. It was the stuff dreams are made of. They're talking about the Cinderella team. Why don't you talk about what happened last week?
The Bishop's Gators, who've only been playing women's hockey at this level for 4 years, walked in and against teams whose enrollments are way bigger than Bishop's is and who've been around for a lot longer and won more national titles than Bishop's has. And the Gators came out with the national championship, which is the first time anyone at Bishop's has won nationals since men's basketball did it in 98. Friday, they got off to a quick start against UBC and then scored a couple minutes in, but then eventually UBC ended up taking a 3-2 lead, and the Gators pulled the goalie, got the game-tying goal with about 30 seconds left, and then in overtime, Gabrielle Santerre, who sent the Gators into the semis with about 2.5 minutes left to go in overtime, what would have been a shootout had they gotten through the 10 minutes. The next day, they got past the U of T to advance to the finals, and then on Sunday, they played the hosts from Waterloo, who were sort of on a bit of a hot streak of their own and had the crowd behind them. And the arena was about 1,500 seats. So, you know, kind of sort of if you doubled the TiVo complex or the Jane and Eric Molson Arena, sort of that's about it. Most of it was cheering for Waterloo, other than a section of people in purple who were making as much noise as they could, but they were certainly outnumbered. You know, it was battle of goalies until Santerre again broke the deadlock midway through the second, an insurance goal late in the third, and then an empty netter to finish it up, and they won the final 3-0. So the Golden Path Trophy has made its way back to Lennoxville. A new name for Highway 410. It's got to be the Golden Path now.
That's great. Putting this into perspective, I guess it was going to open doors as well for future recruiting, I would think.
This is the type of thing that they'd already done well in recruiting already to get to this point after just 4 years, because, you know, the other team that entered U Sports at the same time has not gotten the level where they're competitive in playoffs and challenging for nationals. But the Gators have, and certainly down the road, this is something Valbois, their coach, can point to. And, you know, that if you come to Bishop's, you've got a chance to be competitive at the national level.
So on a scale of 1 to 10 on the surprise meter, this is a 14?
Pretty much. I mean, I thought they would do okay. I didn't think they would win the whole thing.
That's wonderful. March Madness, very quickly before we go, they will be down to 4 by Sunday?
Yeah, the Sweet 16 closes as 4 games tonight, and then the regional finals are Saturday and Sunday. So we'll be down to, we'll know our final 4 by Sunday night.
Now, is Mrs. John sort of sick and tired of seeing you in front of the tube, not doing anything else but watching?
Yeah, she just sort of, you know, cleans around me.
Yeah, is she a little bit like my wife, just rolls her eyes and goes, okay, I'll eventually get him back?
Yeah, essentially.
John Edwards at 5:30. Talk to you then.
Yeah, we'll see you then.
Of course, there's music, but we also talk about a lot of issues that matter to you. You're listening to the Friday Drive on CJMQ 88.9 FM and CIDI 99.1 FM.
Somehow we keep marching on. For all of the times we've stopped, for all of the things I'm not.
The Weekly News Review with longtime Townships journalist Mike McDevitt on the Friday Drive.
Weekly News Review, Michael McDevitt is not available this week. Townships born and raised Robert McPherson is an experienced journalist and editor who's worked extensively for Agence France-Presse. Robert, thank you so much for filling in for Michael from London. How are you?
Yes, from the Air Canada Maple Leaf Lounge, waiting for the flight back to Montreal in a few hours. So good to talk with you.
Look forward to seeing you again. Plenty of things to talk about. Let's start with the federal election. The campaign started this week, Robert, and perhaps you can tell us about how the UK views the Canadian elections and Liberal leader Mark Carney.
April 28th, voting day, and I can tell you that here in London, you come out as a Canadian and you can be sure every Brit you meet wants to talk about Mark Carney, who is a known quantity here as he was governor of the Bank of England during the Brexit years, having previously been at the Bank of Canada. And I have to say that in the years I've lived and worked here in the UK, I've never seen so much awareness of current events in Canada before, which is nice. You know, that said, from the outset, I understand this was really going to be an election to decide who can best stand up to Donald Trump and rebut his fascination with tariffs and dreams of annexation. So far, I'm a little disappointed. The talk has been not about Canada's survival, but tax havens and TV debate arrangements. And here, we should thank Tom Mulcair for pointing out a CTV column that TVA proposed having the French debate at precisely the same time as the Canadians' final game of the regular season, which is not particularly brilliant, but there it is. You know, Trump himself, well, first we have these 25% tariffs on imported motor vehicles, automobiles, trucks that he announced this week. It's hard to feel sorry for GM and Ford, but listen, GM put more than $1 billion to retool its Oshawa plant in the last couple of years to build Silverado pickup trucks, one of the most popular and most quote-unquote American vehicles you can have. Ford also did a lot to its Oakville plant for F-Series trucks. Now, of course, their price has suddenly gone up 25% in the U.S. It's going to take some time, I think, for the effect of those tariffs to be felt, not just in Canada, particularly among American consumers. And, you know, there's a school of thought that going around from here and there that you shouldn't interrupt your rival while they're busy digging their own grave. I know perhaps that's the approach to take, but in any case, I think for the next 2 or 3 years, if not more, Canadians and Quebecers and townshippers are going to be in for economically a rough ride. Now, going back to the election, I think it's still early days. It'd be interested in see how it unfolds and particularly how, you know, what the Trump effect might be, particularly out of the man himself in Washington. He seems to have mellowed a little bit on Canada. He's called us nasty in a recent interview, which I suppose is a compliment. Justin Trudeau is now out of the picture publicly. Remember that a decade ago, Trudeau styled himself as the anti-Trump of global progressive politics. And 10 years later, he's no longer the hip young gunslinger, and yeah, Trump can't help but enjoy the last laugh at Trudeau's expense.
Robert, do you have a sense that social media or broadcast interference is, you know, talk about tampering. Is this a big problem in your estimate?
you know, social media has changed so much the equation in elections. You know, I think for a portion of the population that is really glued to their Twitter / X feed or TikTok or so forth, social media has a great way of pushing people's buttons and spreading, if not misinformation, then truncated information that lacks a lot of context. How social media is going to sway this election should be interesting. But then we've lived also a little while now with social media. We've seen its impact on previous elections throughout Canada and elsewhere. So perhaps the electorate is a bit more aware of its impact and perhaps will respond accordingly.
All right. Quebec budget, a $13.6 billion deficit projected by Finance Minister Éric Girard this week. What's your take on it?
Remember, Quebec is due to go to the polls for a new provincial government and other provincial election by October next year, 2026. So in a sense, this is, you can read this as a pre-election budget. And of course, the other uncertainty is the uncertainty that Donald Trump brings into the picture. With Trump continues on the warpath with his tariffs, then the experts all agree we're headed for a recession over one, perhaps 2 years, and that's certainly not good for growth anywhere. As the budget's concerned, see, Éric Girard, the finance minister, is forecasting that, as you mentioned, the $13.6 billion deficit, a record, but no tax increases, but also $12.3 billion investment over 5 years to generate wealth and support Quebecers in these times of uncertainty. Kind of reminiscent of COVID, isn't it? Sort of governments compelled to bring out the fire holes, perhaps with good reason, to ease the pain. Now, can Quebec balance its budget by 2030, as it's actually required by law to do? That's the $13.6 billion question and rising. But I think Quebecers might be prepared to bite the bullet given the context and of Washington and the 51st state rhetoric. But at the same time, I think the public is certainly getting impatient with the level of health care as well as education in Quebec. They'll want to see some real value for money even as they go through these hard times.
Hear, hear. All right, that leak in Washington this week, the editor of The Atlantic was part of an email chain detailing sensitive airstrike information in Yemen. Talk about being astounded. Is this gross incompetence? Is it recklessness? Or is it both, Robert?
I'm going to bet that it's at this cold open of Saturday Night Live this Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the one where the editor of The Atlantic, Jeff Goldberg, by the way, a longtime Trump critic, surprised himself when he discovered he's looped into a group chat about the U.S. attacking the Houthis in Yemen. There's so many ways to look at this. We have J.D. Vance, who is saying it's not a good idea to do it now, and when we do it, let's send a bill to the Europeans to pay for it. Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, declaring in capital letters that Europeans are pathetic freeloaders. Let's kind of not forget that the Europeans have, as well as Canada and the Seychelles, also has a naval operation in that part of the Red Sea, which is also directed at minimizing the effect of the Houthis on shipping through that area. But yeah, Jeff Goldberg came out in print at the start of the week with this bizarre story, although he withheld parts that he believed would be sensitive in terms of national security. Pretty responsible of him. The White House responded by saying, no big deal, nothing classified in that group chat, and there were no war plans in it. I noticed on Wednesday that The Atlantic went on to ask the White House, well, in that case, shall we publish the entire chat, including the bits that our editor thought were too sensitive? To which the White House replied, no, don't do it. But they went ahead and did it anyway. I think they just omitted the name of a CIA officer, but otherwise showed that it did show, you know, quite precise details of the operation that would have, I think everyone would agree, would have compromised the operation if they had fallen to somebody else's hand. And who knows, might else have been able to tap into that conversation, since they didn't use a government-exclusive program, but instead used as an app that anyone can download from the Apple Store or Google Play. So raises question as well. Why can't these people meet in real life anyway? They're mostly in the same town at the same time, aren't they? And isn't this what the Situation Room down in the basement of the White House is for? all in all, not a good look for an administration in Washington who claims to be taking a chainsaw to government incompetence and deep state shenanigans. We have to wait to see what bizarre story comes out next week.
Speaking of bizarre stories, Robert, just a couple of things. Kristi Noem, who made all that trouble in Stansted last week, has dropped a bombshell. She says she's going to do away with FEMA. So can you just imagine how Americans who are caught up with all these disasters, they're going to have to deal with that. Here's another one for you. Billionaire Elon Musk has been nominated for the 2025 Nobel Peace Prize for free speech advocacy. Me, that's unbelievable.
If he got it, he would really seriously upset his boss, I think. I think I won't be surprised if Donald Trump is thinking of his legacy, wouldn't mind having a Nobel Peace Prize himself for brokering the end of the war in Ukraine, if that, albeit on Russia's terms. I remember Barack Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize for basically, in hindsight, nothing really. And Trump probably wants to match Barack Obama on that level, you know, finish his second term as a hero, as it were. That's, of course, if he doesn't try to get for a third term, Constitution notwithstanding.
The Weekly News Review, Robert McPherson filling in for Mike McDevitt from London, England this week. Robert, thank you so much for this. I so appreciate it.
Okay. We'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
If you have any comments or questions regarding what you hear on today's show, email us at cjmqnews@yahoo.ca.
Dreaming about you, sinking into my bed. Dizzy, I see stars all around my head. Lifting me up to the moon and back again. You're my lucky penny, yeah, you just make sense. I like to keep my cool, but you're divine. Mother Nature must have taken her time. Come on, take me away, I'll let you drive. You're water and lemon over ice. It's late, but I don't want to stay. A feeling I can't explain. My ego's melting away. I see everything in slow motion.
Like a movie scene.
All the heavens suddenly open.
Hear the angels sing.
Just two fish in the sea. I'm missing you before you even leave. Wishing there were more days in a week. It's late, but I want to stay. A feeling I can't explain. My ego's melting away.
Through to me, quite
time for your weekly information from the Lake Brome, Missisquoi area on the Friday Drive.
Taylor McClure right now reporting from the Brome, Missisquoi region with stories for you from this week. Taylor McClure, how are you?
I'm not doing so bad. I could use Mother Nature making up her mind about what weather she wants to bring. But besides that, I'm not doing too bad. Hope things are going well on your end, Daniel.
Boy, oh boy, do I feel your pain. It was 16, 18 degrees last week. And look, it's snow this weekend. Come on. I mean, come on.
I know. But hey, we live in Canada. What can you do?
All right. A couple of things from you for this week. Let's start with the cooperative housing.
So I wanted to speak a little bit about cooperative housing here in the region because La Fédération des Coopératives d'Habitation de l'Estrie is actually raising awareness around the need for cooperative housing here in the eastern townships with a sharp increase in demand for, you know, alternative housing solutions to address the housing crisis that's happening not only here but across the province. So CIDI had the chance to speak with Mokhtar Sada, who is a member of the team at La Fédération des Coopératives d'Habitation de l'Estrie and serves as Director of Renovations for Entraide Habitat Esprit, which is the technical resource group that serves La Fédération. And he explained that with cooperative housing, people don't have to pay rent to a landlord who is collecting a profit. People living in co-op housing collectively own and manage their housing, which means decisions about rent, maintenance, and governance is made by the people that actually live there. And he emphasized that because of the way that co-op housing works, the model helps ensure affordability and stability because costs are kept as low as possible, and it helps build a sense of community, which he said that, you know, neither of which many people have here in the region right now. So La Fédération des Coopératives d'Habitation de l'Estrie has seen a big jump in demand for co-op housing from large families with several children, retirees, young professionals, low-income seniors, single individuals, and single mothers. He noted that these demands have actually tripled, and the Fédération currently has 600 applications pending for these types of requests for cooperative housing. So it's quite a large number, and the need is there. So the Fédération is just trying to raise awareness around this solution to the housing crisis that's happening across the province. So for individuals out there who are interested in learning more about cooperative housing or interested in looking into creating their own co-op, the Fédération does provide support. So you can visit their website to learn more information.
I got it. All right. Support measures for local business from the Chamber of Commerce.
Brome Missisquoi Chamber of Commerce is implementing support measures for local businesses here in Brome Missisquoi. I had the chance to speak with Eric Côté, who is the Director General of the Brome Missisquoi Chamber of Commerce, to learn more around these measures and strategies that they're implementing, really to help local businesses in the area that are being affected by the American tariffs on certain Canadian goods. So during our interview, Eric noted that the Chamber of Commerce shares concerns for the agro-food, retail, and tourism sector in Brome Missisquoi due to the rise in costs these sectors may face with the 25% tariff, affecting business growth, higher prices for consumers, which may lead to lower profits for businesses, affecting innovation, and much more. So to help support local businesses here in Brome Missisquoi that are facing this new challenge, the Chamber of Commerce is going about providing resources and access to information and training sessions and advice for businesses to help them understand the implications of the tariffs. They are also organizing meetings with industry experts and one-on-one consultations to discuss possible solutions and opportunities here in the region, and raising awareness for local regional stakeholders to encourage collective action to help minimize the impact, you know, across Brome Missisquoi of this tariff increase. And to encourage people to shop local and to support local businesses, the Chamber of Commerce is also developing a shop local campaign with the goal of, you know, making it a routine for citizens to think of shopping and supporting local entrepreneurs first. So these are some of the things that they're doing just to help local entrepreneurs and businesses on the ground here that are facing this new challenge, and to just help them find solutions so that their businesses can continue to grow and serve the community.
Taylor is heard on CIDI FM, and keep listening every day for daily news bits. Taylor McClure, I trust you have a good upcoming weekend, and we speak next week.
Yes, thanks so much, Daniel. Talk next week.
We'll be right back.
Township's weather, expects snow, low minus 5 tonight. Tomorrow, snow, high 0. Clear on Saturday night, low minus 10. Sunday, cloudy, chance of showers, high plus 4. And long-range rain for Monday and a high 13 degrees. Ed Humphrey comes in just after 5 o'clock with all the information you need for Townshippers. 5:10 interview of the week, Leonard's Fieldbergs. He's the goaltender for the Sherbrooke Phoenix as they start their playoffs this weekend against Blainville. 5:30 sports with John Edwards. 5:40 arts and culture with Sonia Patnode. This week, Ross Murray. All on the Friday Drive on CJMQ 88.9 FM and CIDI 99.1 FM.